You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 222 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Batman Annual number 5, Sensational Wonder Woman number 1, Justice League Endless Winter number 2, Dark Knights, Death Metal, The Last 52, War of the Multiverse, number 1, Dark Knights, Death Metal, number 7, Generation Shattered, number 1, Future State, Harley Quinn, number 1, Future State, Superman of Metropolis, number 1, Future State, Swamp Thing, number 1, Future State, The Flash, number 1, Future State, The Next Batman, number 1, and Future State, Wonder Woman, number 1. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, coming up first for DC news. A secret DC Black Label title is coming from Jeff Lemire and Doug Mankey. That's all I know.
Hey, that, I mean, I'm excited for that. I mean, obviously, the level of excitement will depend on the, you know, what characters and how interested I am in them. But that's a creative team I definitely want to read. So.
Yeah, me too, which is why I put them in DC News. All right, coming up next for DC News, Warner Brothers and the CW have decided to pass on Green Arrow and the Canaries. No surprise there.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the writing on the wall a while ago. And I feel bad for the actors involved in that they're not going to get a chance to work on that series. But it really, I don't know, man. I was not interested in it.
I wasn't either. It was, I'm sure it was probably the writing on it, but, you know.
I agree. Well, yeah. I mean, but I think you could have done a good series with those characters, but I think the writing was consistent with what we had seen, to be honest with you, from those characters. Like, they were pretty, like the daughter I thought was consistent, Mia.
Yeah.
And she's just, I don't know. I think... Yes, I think there's a way that series could have worked, but that wasn't what we saw was not it. And
nope.
Unfortunately, you only get one shot.
Yep, and their shot's over. All right, up next for DC News. Justice Society World War II animated movie will feature an ensemble voice cast led by Stana Katic as Wonder Woman and Matt Bomer as The Flash. And the cast also includes Alicia Rotara as Black Canary, Chris Diamantopoulos as Steve Trevor, Ahmed Abtabi as Hawkman, Matthew Mercer as Hourman, Armin Taylor as Jay Garrick, Liam McIntyre as Aquaman, Alicia Lathrop as Iris West, Joffrey Arendt as Charles Halstead, some advisor, Keith Ferguson as Dr. Fate, and Darwin DePaul as Roosevelt. Sorry for butchering names, but you guys should know by now. I don't know how to pronounce half these names. But it sounds like a good lineup for a cast, though.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm very excited to check out that movie. I mean, the doing a Justice Society movie is exciting in the first place. But yeah, I'm excited to watch it.
I am too. I didn't see a release date on it yet, so I'm sure we'll hear more about that in the future. All right, up next for DC News, Batman Soul of the Dragon animated movie is supposed to be coming out January 26th, so just a few weeks away. So I've seen a preview for it. It looks okay. I'll judge it more once I actually see it.
It's tough because I want to say that the Batman ones are the most inconsistent, but they've also made by far the most animated movies for Batman. So that's kind of like naturally some of those aren't going to be good when that's the majority that you're making.
Yeah, so we'll just have to wait and see. And up last for DC News, Batwoman Season 2 premieres on January 17th, this Sunday. Or when this releases, it'll be yesterday. We're finally getting a CW show back. And then the rest of them should be coming in the next month or so, I believe. We'll be able to talk about those again. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with Batwoman with the new lead actress, so.
Yeah, I have to say, I think Batwoman is the show. I wouldn't necessarily say the most excited in terms of my enjoyment of the show, but I'm excited to see what it's going to look like because it's going to be such a major change.
Yeah. And the first episode's called What Happened to Kate Kane, so I think that's kind of funny because that's what the audiences are going to be wondering.
Yeah.
All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
What is the Soul Forge podcast? Join Sean and his guests as they talk about sex, geekiness, witchcraft, Star Trek, awkward dates, poetry, life, the universe, and everything else. Interviews have included writers, atheists, a rap star from Australia, a reality TV star, and a sex goddess from San Diego. If you have a story to share or just want to listen to one, check out the Soul Forge podcast. The Soul Forge. Let's find out together.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Batman Annual Number 5. So, the issue opens up in Crime Alley. Dr. Leslie Tompkins is walking toward her clinic when a guy pulls a knife on her and asks for her purse. Another gentleman named Big Henry steps in, and the mugger runs away. We learn that Big Henry's life was saved by Dr. Tompkins, and he's been going to her anger management clinic. Now, when Dr. Tompkins gets to her office, she finds the clown hunter waiting for her. He's got glass shards stuck in his arm, and she tends to his wounds and tries to help him make sense of the world. We get a flashback with the clown hunter into his origin. And Bayo was an average teenage boy playing video games instead of helping his parents out. And when his mother gets on his case, Bayo comes downstairs to the restaurant and helps his father with cleaning some tables to get ready for the dinner rush. Harley Quinn comes into the restaurant, stating that Mr. J decided he wanted to try Foe because he never had it before. So Harley and Joker have dinner, and when dinner's finished, Joker sends Harley and the others out of the restaurant, and he takes care of the bill. And, of course, taking care of the bill consists of Joker gassing Bayo's parents. And Bayo watches them die from laughter right before his eyes. Now, Bayo calls the police, and we see that he has a talk with Batman, who promises to take care of the Joker. But Batman doesn't take care of the Joker the way Bayo wants him to, and he becomes angry with Batman. And when the Joker war hits the Narrows and Batman doesn't show up, Bayo takes matters into his own hand, and thus the clown hunter is born. Now, back in the present, we see that Bayo is confused with who he is supposed to be after his encounter with Harley Quinn, Batman, and Ghostmaker that we talked about in Batman 105. He asks Leslie if he's the good guy or the bad guy, and Leslie talks about Batman and how she doesn't like his violence, but she hopes to convince him to do the right thing. Now, Leslie asks Clown Hunter to help her with making copies for her anger management workshop. And she also has Clown Hunter unmasked so she can meet the boy.
I thought this issue was pretty good. I enjoyed it overall. I know, I think it was last podcast, Drew. If it wasn't, it was two podcasts ago. I made the guess that I thought that he was going to be the Mystery Batman, and we'll get into that later, but that was wrong.
Yeah, it was.
But I'm going to double down. I'm going to double down on a guess that might also be wrong, but just I've noticed before the way they've drawn his hair, but I'm wondering if he's the new Red X based on his hairstyle. Have you noticed that?
No, I didn't. But now that you point it out, that's a good possibility.
Again, I've already been wrong once, so the likelihood of me being wrong is pretty high. But that's my new guess, is I think that he's going to become Red X, which also would kind of make sense. I know it's only really ever been a character in the Teen Titans TV show, but in theory, that was Robin being like a more aggressive, violent version of himself, and that would kind of fit. Right? So I don't know. I could see them going that direction.
Yeah. That's a good possibility. The other thing I was happy about this annual, it was one story and not a bunch of them. I was happy about that. And it stayed pretty focused, gave us the origin of Clown Hunter because we hadn't seen that yet. So that was interesting. So I agree with you. I like this issue myself. And I'm sure the reason why they're giving this story is he's sticking around. So. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Sensational Wonder Woman number 1. When the issue opens up, Diana is making dinner for her husband, Douglas. She's cutting celery and gets kind of upset at herself for not having dinner ready when her husband comes home. We see Diana cuts her finger when she's trying to chop up the carrots. And the next page, we see that Wonder Woman is lying on a table, either unconscious or sleeping. And someone is calling her name, trying to wake her up. We go back to Diana as a wife. She and her husband go for a walk, and a boy chases a ball into the street in front of an oncoming car. We see Diana rushes and grabs the boy as the car slams into her. Diana is fine, but the car is smashed up. Douglas gets very angry at Diana, and something weird starts happening to reality around Diana. And Diana states that reality is falling apart. Next, we see Hawk Girl standing over Diana trying to wake her up. And as reality falls apart around the wife Diana, she tells Douglas to get her hands off her. And the issue ends with Diana stating, "I remember who I am." I found this issue very interesting to see Diana in that wife role from like the 50s. And I was very curious the whole time I was reading this, who the villain is behind this. Wondering if somebody had taken over Diana's mind, Maxwell Lord, Eclipso. I don't know. I was intrigued by this issue.
Yeah, Drew, I totally agree with you. My only complaint with this issue is the same issue that I had with the Batman digital series, which is that it's way too short. My concern, Drew, now is that this is kind of establishing a pattern. I guess to me, I don't understand why a digital comic should be shorter than a hard copy comic. Like, it can't be. If anything, it's easier to produce. I mean, obviously for the artist, it's the same amount of work either way, right? But I that doesn't make sense to me. I thought this was good, but it's not a full issue.
I know. I read fast, that's for sure.
Like I said, I like this story a lot, but I would have a harder time justifying somebody buying this on its own than I would a single issue of a comic. And I think we both know that the sales pitch for a single issue comic right now is not high. It's for people who aren't already comic book collectors, that not a lot of people are convinced to do that. And this I think is an even worse sales pitch. Get a quarter of a story? I'm sure it's cheaper.
Oh yeah, it's under a buck.
But still, like, tell a longer, like, I personally don't understand why you wouldn't make it longer. I just think that feeds into the, well, why would I pay 99 cents for this clearly, even more evident than a hard copy comic. This is even more evident that it is a fraction of a story. Why would I pay part of the price for a fraction of the story when I could pay more for the whole story later?
Yep. So, yeah, I can't disagree with you on that. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League and Endless Winter number 2. So the issue opens up in Gotham at Stagg Industries. The Frost King claims he is more powerful than he has ever been. We see that Flash frees Black Adam from the Frost King's grip, and then the Frost King disappears. Now, Black Adam and Superman have words, and Black Adam calls the Justice League useless and blames the fault on Superman's arrogance. Batman states he put a tracer on the ice while he was fighting the Frost King, and the ice has returned to the Arctic Circle, Greenland, specifically the Jöklabarg region, where the Frost King's sighted tail is. Now, the Justice League shows up at the Frost King's sighted tail, and the Frost King attacks them with ice monsters. The Swamp Thing slash Viking King shows up and attacks the Frost King, and discovers that this Frost King is just another avatar. Batman and Hippolyta find Edwald's family and the real Edwald Olofsson. Superman says to keep the Frost King contained in the glacier, but this angers Black Adam. The Frost King doesn't need to be contained, he needs to be ended. And Superman chases after Black Adam and gives him a timeout. We see Aquaman and Mira show up with the fire trolls and help turn the tide of the battle. Now, Wonder Woman and Hippolyta are able to reach Edwald because Wonder Woman is wearing Edwald's clan sigil. The Viking King returns to Valhalla. Swamp Thing's body is looking for a new avatar. And Sebastian Stan goes to prison. And Black Adam is speaking out against the Justice League in Kondak. Back at the Hall of Justice, John Stewart and Bobo get invited for Christmas dinner at Barry and Iris's house. And at the Fortress of Solitude at the Arctic Circle, Greenland, Edwald goes into suspended animation until a time his family can be freed from the ice. And then at the end of the issue, we go back to the 10th century. The Wizard Shazam reseals Black Adam in his tomb prison, and Black Adam swears the world will pay the price. So there's your wrap up to Endless Winter.
I have to admit, Drew, I understand that that is chronologically the end of the past story, but I thought that that was creatively a bizarre decision to make the end of the story. Didn't you?
You mean putting Black Adam back in the tomb?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It doesn't make sense based on the present story. Like, that ending makes sense if Black Adam becomes the villain. And
yeah.
I guess you could maybe, you could kind of argue. I mean, he's certainly antagonistic, but I don't see how you could argue that he becomes the main villain at any point. And certainly not to the level that the world will pay. In theory, he's acting as he believes he should to be a hero. Obviously, we know that that's not the case, but he thinks he's doing the right thing. So that's not consistent with the vow for revenge. I just thought it was... I understand that that's the end of that story. And I'm not saying don't include that scene, but the closing scene? I don't know about that.
The only thing I could think of was... And it was weird that he vowed revenge, because we know he's going to be joining the Justice League. And I'm wondering... After I read that scene, I'm like, are they planning on having him be on the Justice League and then turn into a villain and get some sort of revenge that he's been planning for this long time or something? The problem with that is it doesn't make sense, because Black Adam's been free for a long time. Why hasn't he been getting his revenge already? You know what I mean?
I think, Drew, this is my guess. I think that's meant to be foreshadowing what ultimately would turn into the new 52 Shazam origin, in which Black Adam is the villain.
Oh, okay.
But how many people are going to know and realize that? Because we're in an era where all stories happen and everything mattered now, I think that's what that's meant to imply, is that the current version of Black Adam and Shazam becoming present day heroes is the one that was told in the New 52.
Okay, I guess that could make sense, but most newer readers aren't going to know that.
Absolutely.
Or care, or, you know, it's well, a long time from now. You,
what do they have to care about in the story in the first place? Ultimately, what did the story even do? We both knew it was ultimately going to be an inconsequential story, but good Lord, they really made sure that that was the case.
Yes, they did.
There was just nothing. There were just no ramifications. I found this hilarious, Drew, that we read this in conjunction with Death Metal, because everything that Death Metal is arguing, this story is like exactly why comics haven't been doing what Death Metal is arguing for. Because it's this big, massive story, in theory, that is ultimately wildly inconsequential. It will have no ramifications on anything.
Yeah. I mean, people won't even remember this years from now, so... Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Dark Knight's Death Metal, The Last 52, War of the Multiverses, number one. I was very disappointed when I started reading this issue and realized this was another collection of short stories. And basically, people were fighting their doppelgangers. And you could have just skipped reading this. I don't even think it affected anything in the Death Metal number 7 issue.
Oh, it is so... I don't know if they could have beat a dead horse more thoroughly in both Metal and Death Metal, the two combined, doing all these. First, it was just dark Batman versions of every character, and now it's just dark versions of every character, which isn't that different. I'm just sick of it. Like, it's just been done so much so recently. Like, maybe I'd be interested in a year or two, but they've done this and done this and done this and done this, and they just keep doing add-on and more add-on and more add-on, and every single one of these add-on stories has like three or four new dark mirror versions of a hero, and it's like I get it. I'm gonna be honest with you, I liked the Constantine story, and that was also one of the only ones that I read closely, because my eyes started to just glaze over, Drew, and I was like, I can't do this. I'm not gonna sit through another issue of this, and I just sort of flipped through it.
The other one I liked the Constantine story too. The other one I liked was the Ryan Choi story, but it wasn't really fleshed out. It was just kind of rushed.
See, actually, that's the one that made me glaze over. I think that was the one where I was like, ah, I'm out, because I didn't particularly care for the art style that much, and I was like, you know, I don't need this. We've got 11 other comics that we're reading this week. I don't want to read this, and I just sort of. I skimmed through it to make sure I knew the basic beats, and the Constantine one, like I said, caught my attention. But otherwise, I was like, I'm out. But I will say, finally, you can skip this one. For the first one of the very few times, you do not need this tie-in issue.
Nope. And with that, we're moving on to Dark Knight's Death Metal number 7. The issue opens up as Diana rises from the earth with godlike powers, and she can see the whole entire war at once. Diana can feel that the Dark Knight is more powerful than she is, but she's not going to bow to him. Instead, she begins to fight, and the Dark Knight hits Diana so hard that she's flung back in time to the beginning when the Hand made the multiverse. The Dark Knight tells Diana the Hands are coming to destroy the multiverse. And the Dark Knight tells Diana, even if she wins, the Hands will destroy the multiverse. If she surrenders, the Dark Knight will destroy the Hands and give her a restored world, a paradise. And Wonder Woman refuses and kicks him in the face with the Hand of Creation. And suddenly she gets a surge of power. Wonder Woman punches the Dark Knight so hard he flies forward in time to the dying sun. And as the Hands come for the multiverse, Diana pushed the Dark Knight into the flames of the dying sun. Next thing Diana knows is that one of the Hands is with her. It has taken the form of a different version of Wonder Woman, and the Hand tells Diana that the heroes have inspired the Hands to rethink some of their methods. Their multiverse will be restored, but will be quite different than before. Next, we see Barry take Wally to the dark side of the moon, to the totality where heroes and villains alike work to protect our world from future threats. We see that the members include Hawkgirl, Martian Manhunter, Mr. Terrific, Vandal Savage, Tala Al Ghul, and Lex Luthor. We learn that some of the dead have returned and that no traces of Darkseid can be found. And the dark multiverse has been put back below. The House of Heroes exists once again, and new Earths are growing with a web of multiverses to become an omniverse. And it is the infinite frontier. We also learned that our Earth is not the center of the multiverse anymore. There's not one center, but two sources of energy. One they think is an Earth, and the other they're calling the Elseworlds.
Well, so Snyder definitely, it was pretty clear early on in this run what his, and then honestly from his Justice League run leading up to this, what he wanted, right? Snyder's very clear that he's tired of reboots that constantly wipe out continuity and, you know, establish a new thing because, and I agree with him, that's how you lose readers. If it brought in huge waves of new readers, the comics would be more popular than they are right now. It's just a fact. Like, just what they think it's going to do has never worked. And all it does is it just resets the story so that you get the same story for a third time in a row. And I think it just messes with creativity because you can't pull from old stories anymore. So I like that. I will say, though, Drew, I think Snyder tried to have his cake and eat it too with the end of this story, where he establishes this every story matters and every consequence that happens is going to matter. Nothing's going to get wiped out, but also I'm going to wipe out most consequences from this story.
Yeah.
it honestly felt really hypocritical because he was drawing attention to it. He's like, hey, look, I'm sick of all of these big crisis events wiping away all of these stories people have told. And then, in his opinion, clearly, replacing it with a worse version of continuity. Let's just have everything matter again. All of these stories have happened. All of it counts. Let's just move forward and just tell stories. But my story doesn't count. a little hypocritical. That's all I'm saying.
Yep. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Generation Shattered Number 1. The issue opens up an Earth's future after the great disaster. Kamandi and some of the others are running for their lives because a wave of coronal energy is erasing existence. An old man, Booster Gold, shows up, and Booster gets shot by an arrow. So he gives his Skeets gauntlet to Kamandi, who must finish his mission. Next, we see time is being affected everywhere. They show us Our Man in the 853rd century. They show us the Reverse Flash in the 25th century. The Linear Man at the Vanishing Point. The Time Trapper at Time's End. We see Rip Hunter in the present. Abracadabra in the 64th century. And Wave Rider, who's in the Time Stream. And someone I don't think I've seen in comics since the 90s. Wave Rider comes to Earth's future where old Booster is, and they both vanish in the coronal wave. Now, Kamandi continues Old Man Booster's mission. Skeets takes Kamandi to the 31st century to get Brainiac 5, but he ends up getting Superboy instead. And this isn't John Kent, this is the Clark Kent Superboy. So this is old school Superboy from Legion of Superheroes. Next, they travel to 1993 to get John Henry Irons, Steel. And this is during the Reign of Superman storyline, when Superman was dead, but there was four Supermen that showed up claiming to be Superman. The next stop is the year 1987, where Kamandi rescues the female Dr. Light. Now, Kamandi is supposed to get Superman next, and it was unclear if this was still in 1987. But the Superman we see here is not cooperative at all, which I kind of found odd for Superman, but he ends up taking a young, arrogant Booster Gold instead. Now, in 1983, Kamandi recruits Starfire from the Teen Titans during the Marv Wolfman and George Perez run, because we see that Terra is on the team still, so we know it's before the Judas contract storyline. I'm not sure of the date on this one, but Commandy comes to Ran where Adam Strange is fighting against an attack on the capital city, and Sinestro shows up, and he's a Green Lantern. Commandy takes Sinestro with him. Now, Commandy's last stop is in 1939, where he picks up a rookie Batman and takes him to the Vanishing Point. Now, while the heroes are trying to figure out what is going on at the Vanishing Point, reprogrammed linear men show up and demand the heroes surrender and prepare for re-education. Now, the heroes fight back into shards of time until finally the main villain shows himself, some dude named Dominus. Dominus is creating a new timeline, one he calls Perfection, and he tries to reset the linear men and our heroes. While we see the linear men are reset once again, the heroes are not. And then Dominus sends them away into the shattered time stream where the linear men hunt them down and try to destroy them. And at the end of the issue, we see Dominus goes home to a place that's black and white, and his family's there, and it looks like it's out of the 40s or 50s. His wife has dinner for him, and his kids are excited to see him. It was strange. I'm very curious what your opinion is on this generation shattered.
Got it. I guess my main question is, Drew, this feels like this was meant to set something up, and I'm wondering if that's just not the case and they just want to do this story anyway, because I don't know what the purpose of this story is.
I don't know what the purpose...
It seems like an event kind of story, doesn't it?
Yeah. You could tell it was supposed to be an event, and we know that they had some sort of generations event they wanted to do, and it changed. And I was curious. I was wondering if this story is supposed to explain what Future State is when we get to the end of it.
I don't think so. I think Future State, from the blurbs that we've gotten and from the end of Death Metal, Future State essentially is just like these are glimpses into what the future of DC could look like. These are like the stories that are being potentially created coming out of this new universe. Right, so these are potentially new as part of this infinite universe that we're seeing. These are stories that could become some other world.
All right, so this generation shattered is just its own event off by itself then?
Drew, I don't know. That's why, that was the big takeaway for me from this. I was like, what is the point of this story? Because it seems like it's trying to do, to me, it's trying to do too much to be a self-contained story. But I also don't know what else it could possibly be doing, because it's doing the exact thing that Death Metal doesn't want a story to do, which is wiping everything out.
I know. It felt like a big event comic.
It's just kind of baffling. I really don't know. I would love to know what the point of this comic is. Is it a sunk cost thing? Like, they wanted to do Generations, it didn't happen. But they already had the comic done, so screw it. We're just going to put it out. I don't know.
I do have to tell you, I found the pick of characters that Commandy was picking out interesting. They're putting a bunch of different characters, old school characters, together for this mission. And I had some of those old vibes to it that I liked from back when I read the stuff. So it definitely felt old school.
And look at the creative team on that. That's not a coincidence.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I don't expect this to have any consequences to the normal DC universe, but I could see it as a fun story depending on how it goes from here.
Yeah, and I agree with that completely. I don't need it to be a big consequential story. I mean, I've been arguing against that for DC doing that. So I agree. I think it could be an interesting self-contained story. It just doesn't read that way yet. I'm hoping that changes, or that we have a clearer idea of what the point of the story is. We'll find out.
Yeah, I guess we will. All right, well, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll go into the future.
We're the Con Guys, as in Comic-Con, and this is the Con Guys Show, coming at you straight from the heart of Hollywood, California, with the news, celebrity interviews, and fun-loving opinions to help fuel your passions. We are your ultimate insiders, filmmakers, writers, actors, costumers, gamers, panelists, but most of all, we are fans. And whether it's sci-fi, collectibles, comic books, gaming, animation, cosplay, or fan conventions, if you love it, we cover it. Your behind-the-scenes look at all things con.
And we're back. Let's talk Future State, Harley Quinn number one. The issue opens up and we find Harley Quinn is in prison and her therapist is Jonathan Crane. Now, Crane seems to be reformed and he wants Harley to help him with the capture of Professor Pig. After Professor Pig is captured, Harley helps with the capture of Firefly. Thirdly, Harley is asked to help capture Black Mask and the story is to be continued. Did you notice during this issue, Harley Quinn didn't do anything?
I mean, she doesn't take action, but her advice is spot on, is what leads to the capture of Pig and Firefly.
That's true. I gotta tell you, I was bored with this issue. I don't know
really?
About you.
Oh, I thought the art on this was phenomenal. I really enjoyed the art style of this comic. And then I liked the story. I liked that, Drew, what I liked about this was that we got to see a side of Harley that we don't always get to see. We're always kind of told that she's smart, and we always get kind of glimpses of it, but then they also kind of, like, they try and do the have your cake and eat it too, where she's really smart, but then they also play her ditzy at the same time. And I liked this one because we got to see someone who's very good at her job. She you know, as a someone in her field, she's able to psychoanalyze these guys and go, look, this is how you're going to capture Pig. You're going to do this, this, and this, and that'll capture him. Boom. Caught him. And then you're going to do this, this, and this, and that's going to capture Firefly. I really liked it. And I kind of liked the, like, Hannibal Lecter style with it, where you're, like, going to the criminal to catch other criminals. I was a big fan. I thought this was one of, like, the top two Future States that we read.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I was just, I mean, it was an okay story, but I don't know. I just didn't care for it that much. That's just how I felt.
Wrong, Drew. That's fine.
That's just how
we're
I felt.
We're all wrong sometimes.
All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Future Man State, Superman of Metropolis number one. When the issue opens up, Metropolis seems to be in chaos. Adrid Trojan, founder of Trojan Solution, has been turning people into nanotech, connecting technology to every part of their being. We find out Lex Luthor has been exiled and LexCorp is crippled. Andrid Rogen and his zealots have declared the city the Free Republic of Metropolis. Now, when the U.S. military shows up, Trojan has abandoned the city, but left his most dangerous piece of technology behind. The military wants the artificial intelligence known as brain cells. Jonathan Kent is now the Superman of Metropolis and has been patrolling Metropolis for over a decade. When the military starts attacking, Superman tells them to go home. Now, during John's first year as Superman, we found out that Brainiac had attacked, and John and Kara destroyed Brainiac, and the Trojan scientist used remnants of Brainiac's skin to create brain cells. And I got the sense that brain cells and Jonathan had some sort of friendship. Now, to protect Metropolis, John decides to shrink it down and bottle it up like Kandor and takes it to the Fortress of Solitude. Supergirl shows up and she's not happy with John. She tells John when the military shows up, they are handing over brain cells to them and John is going to step down as Superman. Now, Kara and the U.S. military fight John. And while they're fighting, Brain Cells steals Metropolis and escapes in his spaceship. I gotta tell you, Cletus, I didn't really care for this story either.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on this one. I thought this one was dumb, honestly. I don't know how else to put it. Like, I didn't understand what John was thinking. I didn't understand the whole Brain Cell thing. There was too much. One thing I liked through all of these Future State things was how they just jumped into the action instead of wasting time setting a story up. I kind of like that. But in this case, we jumped, like, too far into the action. You know what I mean? Like, it felt like we had missed too much.
It was hard to tell what was going on. I can tell you that.
It was hard to tell what was going on. The Supergirl thing was particularly hard to go on because it was like it was legitimately understandable that she would be upset, but then it was like a mix of legitimate being upset and also being affected by something in brain cells, like not kryptonite, but sort of kryptonite.
Yeah.
and that was – it was just kind of – it was hard to follow in a way that was dumb. It was like, well, this is just kind of silly. I didn't care for – I didn't care for any of the stories in this issue.
Yeah. We had a Mr. Miracle story where it looked like he was trapped inside the bottle of Metropolis trying to figure out what was going on. But it wasn't that great of a story.
Nothing really happened in it. Like, that was the problem. Like, it was – it's a different Mr. Miracle. Interesting.
Yes.
Let's do something with that. And then we just didn't. And I was just like, well, what was the point of this story?
And then the Guardian story, I think it was 6 months after the Metropolis had been bottled.
That was how I took it, yes.
Yeah. And I didn't really care for that story either. So.
No. And I think it's not – the other thing I will say to you, I think one of the reasons I didn't like this one as much – it's not my favorite, two favorite – were the Harley Quinn and the Wonder Woman feature states. And it's not a coincidence. Those are, in my opinion, by far the best two artwork. A lot of the other ones felt like what we kind of thought, where they might phone it in with some of the reserve artists. And that's what this issue was to me.
All right. Well, since you're saying what your favorite ones are, mine was the Swamp Thing one and the Wonder Woman one. I like those two. All right. Well, let's move on to Future State Swamp Thing number one. When the issue opens up, the world has changed from what it was. The Green Father, Swamp Thing, tells the story of how the violence of humans caused the Earth to fight back in a war of melting and floods, of brush fires and incurable illnesses. When the war ended, the humans and their heroes were gone, and everything changed. Swamp Thing created all the people that are like himself, as we see throughout the issue as he explains their different parts. Now, Swamp Thing is searching for humans. In Manhattan, Swamp Thing learns from the trees that the humans have gone north a long time ago, so Swamp Thing decides to head north. Now, in Canada, Swamp Thing discovers the body of Boogon, one of his creations, who was supposed to be standing guard. Swamp Thing follows its tracks in the snow to a cave where he finds a human hiding. And Swamp Thing learns that the human's name is Venon, and he came from far up north beyond the flood lakes from the star, which I'm assuming is supposed to be Star Labs. From the Star Fortress, where it is all snow and all white all the time. No plants, no trees, no green. And he came looking for help. Swamp Thing learned that the Undying Man from the fortress was building some sort of weapon that would plunge the whole Earth into everlasting darkness. And then I was curious who the Undying Man was. Was it Anton Arcane, maybe? We also saw some dude, which I thought was Obsidian from the JSA, who's the son of Alan Scott and Thorn. So, I don't know. I was intrigued by this Swamp Thing story just because it was different.
Oh, Drew, I'm right there with you. This was another good one. I definitely enjoyed this. Like you said, because it's so different. We're in this completely different world where Swamp Thing has, like, created his own life forms that are sort of replacing humanity, but he doesn't actually want to replace humanity. This was fascinating. This was one that you could see leading into an actual series, and it might be. I would kind of be okay, honestly, if the Swamp Thing series was continuing this and not needing to worry about being in the present of DC. Because it's good. It's interesting.
It is interesting. And I like the fact that he's created these Swamp Thing-like creatures. They all got their own personalities and stuff. But they're all wondering why he's so concerned with finding humans. And it's very interesting. And what the humans are doing up there, the Undying Man, I'm like, well, who is this? I was very curious, and I'm pretty sure that's Obsidian, that the dude in the machine. I'm sure they're going to use his power. That's how they're going to cast darkness on the earth. But a very interesting story, very mysterious. You know, it's put in, it's something we haven't seen before, and that's a good thing. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Future State, The Flash number one. When the issue opens up, Team Flash is tracking down the Thinker, who has become a part of Checkmate. And when they find Thinker, it is actually the Calculator. And the Calculator is going to take them out, but then realizes none of Team Flash has their powers. They've stolen the Rogue's weapons and are using them. Now, Bart is able to get DeVoe's helmet away from the Calculator. And Calculator is able to kill Bart by using his tech. We find out that Wally West has stolen Team Flash's powers and killed Wallace. Barry is certain that something has taken over Wally's mind, and Barry uses DeVoe's Thinker Cap to create a psychic device that will link them to the Speed Force in Wally's mind. Team Flash uses the modified caps to contact Wally telepathically, and we find out that Wally is possessed by a creature known as Famine. And the creature is able to attack Team Flash, killing Jay Garrick and wounding the others. The issue ends with Barry going to his lab to create something that can kill Wally. Gotta tell you, Cletus, I did not like this story at all.
No, it's just unbelievable. I can't believe this is one of the stories that they're telling, Drew. Are you kidding me?
That's like...
I can't believe that DC... Like, whether you liked Tom King's story with Wally West or not, when most people didn't, I think DC saw that most people weren't a fan of the consequences that that caused Wally to have to face in other comics following that. And so their answer for Future State is to double down even worse on that? Oh, man.
Yeah, I do not want to see a murderous Wally. I'm sorry. I did not care for the story.
And the other thing is, it's also not that interesting because we've seen murderous speedsters. That's like half of Flash's rogues gallery.
That's true.
You know, so it's not like it's something interesting or new. It's basically the Reverse Flash, or it's basically Zoom. You know, yes, slightly different, but not that different.
Yeah, I did not care for it at all. All right, let's move on to Future State, the next Batman number one. Gotham City in the near future is a police state. Drones overhead, facial recognition cameras on every corner. A private security force patrols Gotham with shoot-on-site orders for anybody wearing a mask. And Batman is number one on their kill list. Now, the issue opens up with Batman bringing down a rapist. The dude is wearing a mask, and Batman is compassionate enough to pull off the mask so the dude won't be killed on sight. Next, we visit the Fox residence, and even though the comic doesn't come out and say it, it looks like Luke Fox is the next Batman.
Drew, this really surprised me. Not so much that Luke Fox is the next Batman, that makes sense. But I thought this was supposed to be a mystery.
I thought it was too, and it was not.
I mean, they just came. Honestly, I was confused when it was so clearly Luke Fox. I was like, well, that can't be right. I thought, like, the comic's not trying to hide it. It just basically comes right out. It's like Luke Fox is Batman. Like, oh, wait, what? That's got to be a trick, right? There's like some sort of twist. And then I realized that no, it's just straight up telling you that's who it is. And clearly whoever wrote this was not on the same page as the marketing team.
No, because the marketing team was all about, you know, Batman's identities being secret. But the thing is, right before the comic came out, they kind of released his identity, which was kind of weird. I don't know. Anyways.
I wonder, Drew, I will say this. We know from what Generations was supposed to be that Luke Fox was supposed to be Batman. And I'm wondering how many of these stories are rebrands.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right. Now, Luke's mom is a lawyer that seems to be working on a case for the city to keep their contract with the peacekeepers. Luke's mom blames the mask for what happened to Tam, who's Luke's sister. And we see that Luke visits his sister Tam in the hospital. She's in a coma, and when Luke gets to the hospital, to her hospital room, his brother Tim is there. And Tim apparently goes by Jace now, and he's the black sheep of the family, and Luke doesn't want him around. In the little Santa Prisca neighborhood, we see that there is a gang wearing Bane masks calling themselves Banelitos. They recruit a couple of kids and want them to kill one of the hype soldiers. And just when they're about to off one, Batman shows up. He takes out the two older members. Now the peacekeepers show up and Batman hurries to get the kids to safety. The one kid asks if they're going to jail, but Batman says he's turning them over to child services. And what happens after that is up to the kids. Now the issue ends with a kid walking down an alley and two guys in a red mask show up with a bat and a hammer. I gotta tell you, Cletus, that ending was weird.
I was trying to figure out, was the guy getting attacked in the alley supposed to be the cop that we saw?
I wasn't sure. It was unclear.
Yeah,
I didn't like the end of this issue.
Me too.
So very unclear.
Or is it supposed to just be like that's a new gang that's emerging that hadn't been known before? Like that was, I agree with you, Drew. I didn't mind it, but it didn't make, I think it would be better if we had context, and we definitely didn't have the context for it.
Yeah, I just thought it was a bad ending to the issue. They could have done something a little better. All right, also in this issue, we had a story with the Outsiders. Kitana is fighting the magistrate from outside of Gotham, and she does a lot of talking to her husband, whose soul is in the Soul Taker sword. The Signal is rescuing people that the magistrate has targeted and threatening their families. And then we see that Jefferson Pierce shows up and warns Kitana that the magistrate has planted a spy with Duke. And we also see that Black Lightning appears to be energy. Like, he is lightning. And the story is supposed to be continued in Batman number 3. We also had another story called Arkham Knights. Astrid Arkham takes a bunch of villains and gives them purpose, a focus, a common enemy, and a cause. They fight inside against the magistrate. Clayface, Mr. Zazz, Dr. Phosphorus, Killer Croc, Two-Face, and we see a few other unnamed ones. Look like maybe Anarchy or Tweedledee or Tweedledum. Their headquarters was Wayne Manor. And this issue, this story, tried to make a big deal out of Peacekeeper number 12, but his helmet on the pike by the end of the issue didn't give us enough time to build up this villain to even care about him. And we see this story is to be
continued. We didn't even get to see the actual confrontation. We see them getting ready to fight Magistrate number 12, and then we see that Magistrate 12 is lost. It's like, well, okay.
Yeah. And then this story is continued in Batman number 3. So both of the backup stories are skipping an issue for some reason. But I got to tell you, Cletus, the Outsider story, I didn't really care about that much. The Arkham Knights, I even cared.
I thought they were interesting status quos without necessarily being an interesting story. Like, that version of Kitana is kind of cool. The sort of tech version of her.
Oh, I have to agree with you on that.
I'm interested in that. I'm really interested in this, like, pure energy version of Black Lightning. That's really cool. But I agree with you. The story itself was ho-hum.
Yeah.
It was. I will say the only thing I will give it credit for in terms of story was that it did help build the world of this magistrate-run police state that is Gotham. I thought it did a better job kind of building the world up a bit, as did Harley Quinn, we should mention, is also in that world as well.
Yeah.
But yes, I agree. In terms of stories, not the most interesting.
No.
But the characters themselves, I am interested in those versions of those characters.
Yeah, and I didn't care for the Arkham Knight story at all. I just felt like I was dragging on while I was trying to read it.
I forgot that was even a thing. I know that wasn't that long ago, but when it popped up, I was like, oh, are we really still trying to make this happen?
This is not something I'm interested in.
No, me neither.
All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Future State Wonder Woman number 1. The issue opens up deep in the Amazon rainforest. Wonder Woman Yara Flor is fighting a Hydra, and she has a winged horse companion named Jerry helping her. Or supposed to be helping her. After Yara has slain the Hydra, what looks like a little girl with red hair shows up riding a hog or wildebeest kind of thing. And she's not happy that Yara is cutting one of the horns off the Hydra. Yara explains that she is taking the horn into the underworld and demand that Hades return her sister warrior. And if he refuses, she'll drive it into his heart. Now, Kapora, that little girl's name apparently, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right, but states that she can take Yara into the underworld. And she tells Yara to keep her head down and her mouth shut. But Yara doesn't listen and ends up waking up a three-headed dog. And the story is to be continued. I really enjoyed this Wonder Woman story. It was different. It was funny. I loved the horse, the winged horse Jerry, and the little girl. I know it's not a little girl, but she was a very interesting character too. It just I like the story because it's different, and it's obvious that this Wonder Woman has a goal of getting her sister warrior back, and this is definitely going to go on, you know, take up the whole future state story line. So I found it very interesting.
I really liked this story, Drew, a lot. I thought this was incredible world building. We got this, the scene outside of Hades where they're in the jungle. That in itself was really cool and interesting. She's fighting a Hydra. This nymph or whatever she is pops up. That's interesting. And then we get into Hades, and it's like an airport, but also still with the same things that you would expect with like Charon and him needing payment to cross the river. Like that kind of blend of the modern day and also classic Greek mythology, I thought was fascinating. This was so good, Drew.
It was. I have to say, it's probably my favorite of the future states so far.
It's not even close for me. And I quite liked the Harley Quinn story, and I also liked the Swamp Thing story, and this one just blew them out of the water. I mean, I've made it pretty clear I'm a huge fan of Joelle Jones's artwork, and honestly, as a writer as well, I enjoy her. This is some of the best stuff I've seen her do. I mean, the artwork is just as good as you would expect, but the story is really solid. The world that she's managed to build in just one issue is fascinating.
Yeah, I'm really interested in reading the next issue.
This is also incredibly promising for a character that DC seems pretty intent on making last.
Yeah.
You know, we know some of this stuff is just going to be for future state, and that's fine. But we know that DC wants this character to keep going. And based on this comic, I mean, hell yeah.
Yeah. I have to agree with you. All right. Well, that wraps up another episode. Do you have a shout out, Cletus?
Yeah. So it's not DC related, but coming out on Friday is the first episode of WandaVision. And I'm super excited for that. I'm as I've said on this comic, on this podcast a lot, I'm a huge, huge fan of Tom King's Vision series. And this series is, the TV series is definitely taking parts, not everything, but it's definitely taking parts from that comic. I'm very excited to check it out.
I'm excited to check that out too. So I've seen some previews for it, and I'm like, this looks interesting. But I'll have to say I watched one preview for it. I haven't watched anything else since. Just kind of keeping it kind of a mystery of what it's actually about. So I'm interested in checking that out myself. All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to do an update on the Earth Station DCU short story. I've written 651 words so far. Woo! Though, I got to tell you, I wasn't very satisfied with the beginning, so I'm going to be rewriting it, but I am working on it. So, but that's the thing that happens sometimes. Sometimes I write stuff and I'm like, yeah, that needs to be reworked. So that's just an update on what's going on so far. All right. Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we got Sensational Wonder Woman number 2, and then a bunch of future states, and I'm not going to rattle off future state this time. We got Dark Detective number 1, Green Lantern number 1, Justice League number 1, Kara Zor-El, Superwoman number 1, Robin Eternal number 1, Superman Wonder Woman number 1, and Teen Titans number 1. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
I'm off.
Where are you going?
I've got to go punch a clock with my other boss.
I can see where this is going to be a long commute.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.